Hi everyone, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I just wanted to give a shout out to all of our sponsors. It's been incredible working with each of you. Without you, we wouldn't be able to complete the projects that we have and get our seeds in the ground for this year's fiber variety trials. So thank you for everything that you've contributed. For anybody else, if you're interested in getting involved and want to contribute or sponsor, please reach out. We can make it happen.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for joining. As you guys log on, whether you're listening live or you catch us on the replay, be sure that you log on to our YouTube, our LinkedIn page, and make sure that you hit the little bell so that you're notified when we're live again. We're trying to go live a couple times a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 10 a.m. And then we've got our special events like today with Allie, a material designer, material developer. Gosh, sorry. See, I told her, I was like, I've got to write it down because I know that I'll mess it up. And then there I go. Material developer with Patagonia. And so an awesome opportunity to get to learn about the supply chain, what's happening here in the United States, and what we need in order to really move the supply chain along for materials into fabrics and different clothing pieces. So Allie, before we get started, why don't you tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do, how you got into this, and yeah, introduce yourself to the audience.
Thanks, Mandy. I appreciate the invite today to be live with everyone. Excited to see people hop in and answer some questions as they come through. But I'm Allie LaPierre, as Mandy introduced. I am a material developer at Patagonia. I've been with the company about 7 years now, and I started off my journey actually in the quality and testing side of things. So I used to run in our lab team, the testing technician operations. Kind of my role initially was, we used to kind of joke about it, was like your entire job is to figure out how to destroy the fabric so you knew how to build it up better. And I moved from kind of that quality side of things into material development about 4 years ago. So now I own a couple different categories with the company. I work in our natural woven materials. I lead kind of our workwear line, as well as some of our smaller programs like socks and accessories. So just a couple little things.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about, to get started, I'm curious about the differences in materials between those different verticals within Patagonia. You know, what are some real needs or some material differences?
Definitely. So the way that we're kind of broken out as a company, we have several different lines that we manage. So we have our product categories, which are things like our Life Outdoors team, which is more lifestyle. That's where you see things like our, you know, everyday wear. And then we also have more technical programs like our Alpine and High Ascensionist side of the company, trail running, things like that, fishing, our waiters programs, those are all different categories. And then kind of under that umbrella of categories, we have material developers that kind of answer to each of those. So I'm on the natural woven side, but I have a counterpart who does natural knits. I also have a counterpart who works on waterproof breathable materials for our outerwear jackets, someone who does like our technical wovens and things like that. And obviously our downproof and our downline, and then also our trims team. So we're a team of, I think there's maybe 9 of us now, material developers that kind of own all these different categories within the brand to kind of bring to life these different material packages, depending on the end use of product. So yeah, it's a lot to cover.
Okay, so tell me where hemp is playing a role. Right. And you guys made some pretty big announcements as a company recently, really focus on sustainability, you know, and doing things right. Can you talk about where hemp plays a role and where it's matching some of those goals or falling in line with some of those goals?
Absolutely. So our journey with hemp started back in the 90s. Actually, we are really lucky that we have a fantastic archives team who saves just about everything. But we were going through some old stuff, and they have some catalogs. I think 1997 was the first year that we went formally into production with hemp product. And kind of one of the reasons that we were really drawn to the hemp fiber and why we felt as a brand it was important to kind of highlight it and bring it into the line was the physical properties that it lends to the performance of material. So we were drawn to hemp from the abrasion resistance, the tear strength, kind of the strength of that fiber that you're seeing. And when we compare it to, you know, other natural fibers in the natural fiber portfolio, knowing that, you know, it is a little bit stronger tensile wise than cotton, it can be blended and can be feel comfortable. In those early days of hemp, we really focused in on materials for things like climbing jerseys, where you were getting good abrasion resistance on your arms when you're climbing against the rocks, and also on hot weather opportunities for clothing. So some of our really popular like initial launches in hemp were our hot weather shirting collections, because hemp is such a great fiber for like breathability and like moisture management when you're in hot weather climates. So it started out kind of on our technical and life outdoors side. And then in 2018, we kind of motioned into this new era where we launched the workwear line. And we said, why not take this fiber that's, you know, is stronger, is more abrasion resistant, and bring that to the market in a way that, you know, it hadn't been featured kind of in the industry. And so that's how we ended up launching our workwear collection, which is actually built on the hemp fiber and the strength and the properties that are there.
Okay, so this may be a silly question for some, but I'm curious how they test and what are the properties of the hemp fibers that make it stronger or more abrasion resistant?
Yeah, so hemp itself, the way that it grows, if you look at the actual stalk of the plant, like if you were to cut it in half and look at a cross section, the way that the hemp fiber grows, it's kind of, it's hollow in the center, first of all, which is pretty interesting for a bass fiber plant. And the fiber bundles that we're actually using for the textile apparel grow in these little tiny bundles that are kind of held together by lignin within that skin layer of the hemp plant. And so when you grow a hemp plant and you allow it to go to seed, what starts to happen is that lignin and pectin around the bundles and the fiber actually starts to like unevenly distribute, and you get kind of stringy fiber. But if you harvest before going to seed for a hemp fiber plant, the hemp has actually pretty evenly distributed those fiber bundles. Everything is like relatively the same diameter and same strength. And so you actually get this really uniform fiber that when you remove the natural glues from the plant, you can actually spin just like you would, you know, a cotton. And because it is a bast fiber, so there are some other fibers in that family like linen and things like that, which the industry is familiar with, you know, it is a little brittle when it gets dry, but when you twist it and when you blend it with other fibers, you get this increased tensile property that it allows. So your breaking strength when you're going in and you're, ripping apart a fabric and seeing if, in the width and in the length direction, if it's going to hold together, your seam slippage, things like that. So there's kind of a suite of testing then on the fabric side that can be done, to kind of validate how strong it is compared to other fibers. So, in a lot of cases with hemp, we compare it to like a 100% cotton fabric and see kind of how that like little bit of blend of hemp like adds just a smidge of strength, when it's blended together with cotton. And so you start to be able to kind of tweak and engineer these different combinations to get the end properties that you need in a fabric.
Okay, so kind of a more technical. I'm curious. I understand the farming, decortication, and then there's this second and third, piece of processing that gets added to prepare the fibers to go into spinning. Can you talk about what that looks like or what's needed to be used? And then following that, what we maybe need in the United States where we're short?
Definitely. So, like Mandy just said, you kind of go through this first initial step, which is the decortication, which is really starting to break down the hird, which is the kind of woody layer of that plant, and remove that from the fiber that's going to be usable. And then it goes into the next steps of processing, which are what we consider kind of the wet processing steps, which is degumming for the plant. And so the interesting thing about hemp and about degumming and kind of processing is in some cases for certain types of textile applications, you don't always need degumming, which is nice. And I think one of the things that's important to highlight, in the United States as we're on this journey for hemp is that we are starting to see, farms and processors who are able to get a relatively quality hemp fiber without the degumming step. But the thing to remember there, of course, is that you're always going to have a little bit of a coarser yarn. So the applications that that can be used in, are things like heavier canvas, outerwear, upholstery, stuff like that. Denim, we're seeing a lot where you can use degummed or non-degummed hemp in denim applications. But if you want to go into what we talked about a little bit earlier with like really ultra lightweight hot weather shirting applications for, shirting, dresses, more of that lifestyle place, you actually have to refine the yarn a little bit further. And so that's where our degumming step comes in. And essentially, what that's doing is further breaking down the natural glues of the plant that are going into the textile. So you're kind of removing those additional kind of barriers to further break apart the fiber bundles the way that they grow within the plant. And then once you have removed all of those glues, you can move into the additional steps or processing for yarn spinning. So it'll go through some processes for like aligning the fibers once you're there. So something like, combing and kind of making sure that you're aligning all the fibers before it goes into something like a sliver before it can be turned into a yarn. So there are some fundamental steps in between to kind of prepare the fiber, which are really similar to how we would do it in other textile applications. So the same thing happens for cotton yarn or for linen. You're going to go through these kind of combing steps to make sure the fiber is well prepared, before it can actually be spun into a yarn.
Which you just, I heard you say they need, it needs to be like aligned, basically, combed in the same direction. Is that right?
So aligning the fibers kind of, so essentially that prepares you to be able to add torque and twist into your yarn to provide the strength that you're looking for. And when the fibers are equally aligned, that just makes it easier to both blend with other materials, but also to like maintain that strength in a uniform way across the full yarn as you spin it. So it's important for aligning the fibers kind of going into a yarn processing machine.
Okay. So there's the process, right? Talk to me about where we're at and what we're seeing, maybe even on a global scale, as far as the technology that we need to scale up, successful processing in the US.
Totally. I mean, I think, when we think about US and our domestic strategy, like we've come such a far far way since the Farm Bill was passed. You know, it's been really encouraging to see kind of the interest that both farmers have had, but also this resurgence and interest of kind of bringing these manufacturing capabilities back to the United States. And really this back and forth between, you know, all the different states and conglomerates and startups who are having the conversation around where does it make sense? How does it make sense? What's going to work to kind of bring this industry forward? And I think, you know, one of the places that we're still seeing a gap in the US is kind of that degumming step. You know, I'll say it's been really exciting the past couple of years to see so many farmers get a yarn that could be used in a non-degum application. I'm seeing more people find additional uses for the waste products after processing, like the herd and the lignin, for, you know, textile chemistry applications or for bioplastics offsetting. And so I think that's been really encouraging to see this uptick in the full use of the plant, but where we're still missing is kind of that degumming step. And I say that lightly in the sense that we do have some, thank goodness, opportunities in the US, some people who are looking into these solutions. And I think we'll get there, but I think, you know, the scale that the industry needs overall and also the type of degumming is going to be important. Because one of the things that I really like to consider when we kind of think really big picture about, you know, the United States textile industry and hemp specifically and bringing this online is the fact that we kind of want to do this right from the beginning. Like, if we're thinking through it, if we're building new infrastructure, if we're bringing manufacturing back here, we want to do it in a sustainable way. We want to make sure that we're, you know, low impact, that we're looking at our water usage, that we're taking into consideration as we're building to set us up for like a longer term success in the United States. And so for me, I think one of the really big areas of focus that I always have my eyes and ears open when I'm, you know, looking through new and up and coming things in the hemp industry is for degumming technologies that are going ahead and looking for sustainable alternatives to traditional degumming, because we do know that the degumming step is where a lot of the water and chemistry gets used in the process. So like, that's one of the interesting things about hemp too, is when you look at it from a growing perspective at the farm level, you have this great, incredible plant that does, you know, has a complex root system. It's bringing nutrients up, it's replenishing topsoil. It has the ability to, you know, remove heavy metals. You know, it's this incredible plant that does so much for our soil. And so from that perspective, it's such a regenerative crop. It has, you know, a ton of opportunity for us in terms of, you know, sustainable agriculture. But then when we look to the processing step and we get to degumming and you see how much water gets used and how much chemistry is added to kind of soften and make sure that you're removing everything that needs to be removed, it kind of outweighs what we're doing kind of on the front end with the positive agriculture. So long term, you know, we're really looking for solutions to kind of minimize our footprint when it comes to the additional processing steps that go into the fiber.
Yeah. Okay. You said a lot of things. And one towards the end is hemp and water. Can you speak to where hemp has maybe impacted? You said on the processing side, is it actually more than processing on other materials, natural materials? It is.
It is. So we conducted a life cycle analysis kind of our existing supply chain. And what we found was that compared to some of the other processing and compared to some of the other, you know, if we look at like synthetics and how they're made, right, they're extruded, there's far less water used in their system. So that's hard to compare to. But even comparing to other natural fibers, we're still seeing quite a lot of water just because and energy, really, because that degumming step, the way it's done right now, is you're putting the fiber into kind of large vats of water, you're heating it, you're bringing the chemistry up to kind of strip the natural glues from the plant. And then you're washing it, because of course you have to neutralize your bath after you add chemistry. So it's going through all of these water, this wet processing step for the hemp. And when you're doing that at a really large scale, like that's just a lot of water when you think about it.
Well, and I think that's from my understanding, and I am not an expert in the textile space, right? But what I hear is that process or dyeing is very either chemically intensive or water intensive. And so I think it's, yeah, for multiple. Okay. So now my next, what else was I going to ask you? See, I got distracted with one of the questions, and I'll bring those up here in just a minute. Textile applications, okay. So this kind of two part question. First part on the, what are some specs of fiber that is not chemically processed, right? Without having to go through a degummed process, what are we looking at for the spec? So say that the decortication facilities or the processing facilities, kind of give them an idea of that spec. And then also, is there added equipment to decortication to reach that spec? Can you speak to that a little bit?
I can a little bit. I think one of the things that I like generally put out there when it comes to specs for hemp, because right, I'm like a little far removed from the actual yarn processing. I'm more on the fabric end of things, but what we see more often than not, right, when I'm connecting a decorticator to a spinner or to a textile manufacturer is what we've noticed is like fiber length is very important, especially in non-degummed hemp applications. So, you know, what you'll see is if you end up with a fiber that is not particularly long, that is not degummed, and it's not well aligned, when that goes into a textile, that's how you kind of end up with like a scratchier, more crunchy granola themed textile for a hemp application. And so making sure that for your end application, so right, having a really honest conversation with both your yarn spinner and your textile manufacturer, like there has to be a good relationship there to kind of dictate down to the fiber level, what needs to happen? What should that staple length be? You know, what are we trying to achieve? And so once you kind of know what that number is for your end application, then you can go back to the decortication step, like you said, and you can have a conversation at that level and say, okay, we've passed through once, our fibers are relatively aligned, it's at this length, we have enough wiggle room to pass it through a second or third time in that machine, which you're going to probably shorten the fiber a little bit more, but you might get, you know, a cleaner fiber going into your application. So I think at that front end, the amount of trash, as we call it, that's left over, you know, intermingled with the fiber is pretty important if you're trying to achieve something that is going into a textile. If you're using that fiber for other applications, of course, that threshold becomes a little bit less. But I would say the length and kind of the alignment of the fiber and the number of passes through the machine seems to be kind of the major players that I've, in my experience so far.
Awesome. Okay. So on the material side, what are some that you're most excited about? Either, you know, maybe you guys are making, or you've seen other companies using alternate, you know, parts of the plant that are exciting. Can you speak about some of those?
Definitely. I think one of the big programs for us that was pretty exciting that we launched was our hemp denim program for our workwear line. It was a material that had been a vision for the company for a lot of years and had been a vision of our previous leader, Ed Ahmed. And so kind of bringing that forward and into a product and seeing it on shelves was like a really incredible moment for us. Of course, with COVID and supply chain challenges, we are now navigating how to consistently bring that into the line. And so I think that's one of the other things to consider when we look at, you know, the industry and commercialization is, you know, it is an ever-changing playing field that we have. And there are, you know, there's been challenges with shipping, there's been challenges with cost increases, there's been challenges with making sure there's room in your cut and sew factory to move your timeline down so that you can get product out into the world. And so there are all these little teeny tiny steps along the way from growing it on the farm to putting it in the hands of a customer that a lot of people don't even consider that can go wrong. Any of those steps can go wrong. And sometimes it just takes one to prevent something from going to market, or for us to have to pivot and change a material or change a weight or change an end performance. Like, you know, there, we have to be able to pivot all the time. And so that's also difficult when you're working with an industry that is so new and so up and coming and doesn't have as much experience with needing to have 10, you know, plan A through Z in case something goes
wrong.
It
doesn't even have A through Z, let alone a plan A through Z. Like,
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it is. Well, I can't imagine. I think you just said it too. You know, when I got into this, I was very disconnected also from where I spent my dollar for a $5 shirt and how many people touch that fabric from, you know, like you said, the farm to the spinning to, I went to silk mills just recently in Thailand. And I again was just reminded about how many hands touch that fabric before it even becomes, or that even the material before it even comes yarn, before it gets into the, you know, sewing or the weaving. It's just, it's amazing. And so I have a new respect for clothing and fast fashion, or the, you know, my distaste for fast fashion almost because of the sustainability piece and the effect of how many people are touching it and how inexpensive we're, you know, the dollar we're paying. It just, yeah, it absolutely sits in to, yes. So what are some things that really drive your passion in the textile space? Like what change would you love to see, and what really excites you? And yeah.
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, so my background is in polymer and color chemistry. I went to NC State. Okay. So my background is kind of in textile dyeing and finishing. And previous to my time at Patagonia, I worked in the dyeing and finishing lab at NC State. And so for me, I'm really passionate about water usage in the textile industry and like different dye applications and alternative dyes, more sustainable dyes and things like that. So for me, I love, you know, looking at new technologies that are coming through and looking at, you know, the bio-based space and what's happening over there and taking a look at new ways to formulate or new ways to dye, solution dye applications. And that's been really exciting to kind of, you know, outside of the physical creation of the material and the fiber, to kind of think down the line, you know, as much as we would like to say that, you know, aesthetics aren't the be all end all, you know, at the end of the day, as a customer, you have to remember you need to have pretty things out there on the shelves that people want to purchase, so that, you know, there's also all those steps along the way to make sure that you're producing a full packaged good that is, one, durable and going to last, but also, two, something that people really want to wear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. So kind of back to the hemp subject, I was just thinking about this in perspective, like for a line or a company like yours, what's the volume of yarn or hemp yarn, and where does that equate to number of acres of production, right? What are we looking at for a size for an industry to really support an organization like yours with a fluid supply chain?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And also, like, honestly, a difficult one to nail down, because yeah, there are so many people involved in kind of determining what that is. But the best way I've kind of been able to suss through the data, at least on our end, is, you know, I think the most recent I have on top of mind is like in 2019, we pulled a report for how much hemp was going into our product line, like metric tons wise.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, 195, 200 metric tons of hemp was being blended in these different styles that we were using in our line. And we could say, okay, for every product that we're doing that uses hemp, all it took was like 200 metric tons like that for our line. But in 2015, if we look, you know, just a couple years prior to that, before we kind of launched the workwear line, before we got more, you know, hemp into the different product lines, right? We were using much, much less, like, you know, 87 metric tons, right? So if you kind of think as you scale up, metric tons seems to be the easiest way to kind of like think through that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So where, I don't know where we're looking at then as far as acres and of course for tonnage, talk to me about where supply chain is really healthy for fiber. You know, where have you seen best fiber produced and, you know, best spinnable? I guess you take it from the fiber to the spin to the, or do you buy the yarn? Where do you step in? Where is your...
Yeah. So where I step in as a brand is we're actually buying finished fabric. And so the fabric, where our hands start to be involved, where the fabric ends, and then we are working with our factories for cut and sew and kind of distributing and sending it where it needs to go for being built into a product. When it comes to hemp, obviously there isn't as much infrastructure here for us to be able to start at that point in time. So we have in some of our smaller projects in kind of these hemp exploration moments that we've had in the past few years figured out like, okay, if we do start at farm level, if we nominate down here, like what needs to happen on our end internally as a brand for purchasing orders, for who's organizing, for who's communicating, for timelines, for when fiber needs to ship to a supply chain partner, like what that looks like. And, you know, the reality of the situation is like, we've never really managed that before. So, so like at the end of this, you know, it's been a journey for us internally also with process to say, okay, you know, we don't love having to nominate at the fiber level, right? We want at some point for our material manufacturers to have dedicated spinning partners, who have dedicated decortication partners, who have a dedicated co-op of hemp farmers that they have reliable fiber from, right? Because we're kind of farther down the line when it comes to kind of bringing that up.
Pat had a question. Is that finished yarn or thread, or is that 200 tons of raw hemp out of the field?
Yeah. My understanding from our team was that the 200 tons was calculated based on raw hemp out of the field. And it might not be stalks. It might be processed fiber.
Probably fiber, right?
Yeah.
Probably processed fiber. And that's a big difference when we're talking.
Yeah. Because we do know, like, we did have to go through that journey, right, of understanding how much loss you get from stock processing, what your actual output is for fiber in the end. And it's a pretty dramatic increase, like, decrease in weight. So pretty sure it's for processed fiber.
Awesome. 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 Okay. So fiber, I'm trying to think where we were, where we left off before I saw that question. Areas, regions in the United States that you're seeing good fiber come from, and what are you seeing as far as specs or quality of that?
Yeah, so I think it's been interesting to kind of see the number of states that are popping up, even ones that I'm like, you know, haven't heard much about, or suddenly like, oh, we're growing hemp. And you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But I would say pre-pandemic wise, I think people were a little bit farther with getting uniform quality hemp out the door. And we were seeing hubs pop up in places like North Carolina and Colorado and Kentucky and Minnesota and Montana. And I think some of those places, of course, still exist, but I also think we lost a little bit of that momentum that was happening during the pandemic. And so, unfortunately, you know, I'm not seeing as many of those be as far along as, like, I think we would have been if things hadn't really closed down, which is sad. But the encouraging thing is I am starting to hear more of those kind of come back online. And so Texas now, you know, is a pretty big hub that's coming out as well. And I heard recently, I think someone told me that, you know, there's also a couple of other states that are involved. Pennsylvania is looking at processing. And so I think there are like these little spots where we're seeing either the growing or the infrastructure, and in some places both. And I think when we think about, you know, sustainability wise with hemp, and we think about footprint and we think about transportation, right? One of the things that was difficult, you know, 5 years ago when we were looking at the supply chain here domestically was, you know, we had a processor in Nebraska, but they were growing in Colorado. And like, there's transportation, you know, licenses for crossing state lines, and there's transportation cost. And so I think one of the interesting things that's come out of the past couple of years is kind of this more awareness around how do we localize all of the processing steps in one place, and like, where does it make sense to put those things, and how do we build the industry kind of around where these hubs are being located? So that's been really encouraging.
Okay, so Pat has a question. I'm going to summarize it a little bit, I think, but I'm curious, and like he said, have you seen any samples come across your table and you're like, whoa, guys, we're making really, really great progress? Like, you're just like, yes, this, we're on to something. This still needs, you know, like how close are we on this gap on some samples that we're seeing come out?
Definitely. We're definitely getting closer. Like I'm seeing some pretty good decorticated hemp coming out of Montana. I'm seeing some like pretty like consistent in terms of like aligned and like even fiber coming out of some of our, you know, tribal nations across the U.S. And I'm also seeing
Why is it different in tribal nations, you think? Because it's more hand decorticated? Why is it, what's making it more aligned? And
I think there's a passion there, a passion both from an opportunity to bring kind of processing and manufacturing and jobs to these spaces, but also a passion around, you know, kind of traditional processing of fibers. So when we think of, you know, natural materials, like we've been working with natural materials for years and years and years. And, you know, I would say some of the people who still maintain some of that knowledge are people who never stop doing it. And so there's a passion, but there's also a level of experience there that, you know, they already maintain, which is pretty cool.
Interesting. Very, very cool. Sorry, I did not mean to like jump in, but I was just like, wait, why and what technology is doing that? Because I see a lot of great fiber, right? But I don't see necessarily aligned or consistent. I think that like consistency is really what comes up more often than not now, is like consistent direction, consistent size.
Definitely. And so, you know, there are obviously some players in the market that, like, you know, all of us are aware of, right? Like, we know our friends at Basscor have been, you know, making, refining their machine for years, and they have like very dialed decorticated fiber now. And we also know that our friends at like Ceph Fiber are looking into some of these degumming applications and giving really soft, magical fiber that they're working on in their supply chain. So, you know, we are starting to see it, and that is both exciting and also, I think, encouraging for other people who are interested in getting into the supply chain and who are wondering, you know, how do we do it? Where do we do it? You know, what scale do we need to be doing it? Is these players that have started to see some success.
What do you anticipate for, you know, the next few years as far as new materials coming out of the market, both for under your wings as well as, you know, others in the industry?
Yeah, I think when it comes to, you know, domestic hemp specifically, I think there's going to be a lot of storytelling and just being really realistic about this journey that everyone's been on. You know, I think, you know, you go online and you read comments and you kind of see people and they're just like, why is it taking so long? And why aren't we there yet? And you know, I think the more opportunities we have as brands overall to be able to tell the story, like, here's the farmer, here's what he's doing, here's the certification he goes through to be organic, here's how much money he pays to do that, here's like the work that goes into it, and like trying to be really, you know, authentic about what this journey is like at all steps of processing, what it's like to be a decorticator and have to say, oh my gosh, we do have to pass it through the machine three more times. You know, being really transparent about just the amount of effort and the amount of challenge that comes from understanding a new material and kind of bringing it into commercialization. So I think that's what we'll see a lot more of in the next couple of years. I'm encouraged that we'll also see more manufacturing come online as far as the different steps of processing. Like, you know, I'm not seeing that slow down. I'm seeing more people get involved. I think it's really encouraging to know that, you know, the USDA and some of our government is taking a look, and, you know, the state governments themselves are having, you know, branches assigned to having a conversation around hemp, having a conversation around domestic fiber in general, and how we use more, you know, US-based agriculture in the different industries where we can, you know, domestically here in the US. I think we'll see more of that conversation continue to happen, and more legislation at these individual state levels, which will be, I think, really fundamental in getting a lot of these things up and running. And then in terms of, you know, new materials, even outside of, you know, textile-based apparel, I think one of the really cool things we're seeing, especially for hemp, is kind of the automotive industry take a look at us and say, whoa, what can we do here with, you know, upholstery? What can we do here with bioplastics offsetting? Yeah. Like, oh, I want hemp paneling in my doors, you know, like what are the other industries tangential to us? The paper and packaging industry, like, why not use hemp herd for paper? Like, it makes beautiful paper. There's a store downtown Ventura actually that opened a few months ago that sells like just really gorgeous art supplies. And they have like hemp paper canvases in there that are just like a natural fleck. And you just say, of course, hemp can go here too, right? Yeah. It's kind of, you know, this opportunity where we're seeing hemp in more places where not only does it belong, but it makes sense to put it there. Mm-hmm. You know, we think about the environmental opportunity for planting it and replenishing topsoil, like it makes sense for us to find uses. So I think that's really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, and talk to me about generations, right? Being in the textile space, who really has the buying power or that, you know, that vote to make this impact based on where they're purchasing, you know, their clothing or their textiles? Is it our younger generations?
For sure. It is in the hands of our younger generations now. You know, the millennial and the Gen Z generations are where we're sitting in terms of who has the most buying power in the market. And, you know, I think when, you know, a couple years ago, everyone started to say millennials, you know, in the news, and it was this like big scary thing, like how could we leave the future? You know, I think now that we've been here a little while and we're seeing Gen Z come up and we're kind of understanding the ethos that a lot of these, you know, younger generations use in their purchasing, it's actually really great for us, for the hemp industry and things like that, because people are being more, this is the most consumers have ever asked about where their things are coming from, like in the history of existence. You know, this is the most informed consumer that we have had in the marketplace. And while I think that is sometimes intimidating for brands because we have to find new ways to tell a story and new ways to make sure we're honestly and accurately communicating, you know, our processes and how things are made and where they're made and who makes them. But, you know, it's encouraging because it helps then brands want to do the right thing, right? It helps us help them and they help us do, you know, what's best for the planet. So I think when we think about these people who, you know, the younger generations who are saying, yeah, we really care about fair trade and that's a tag that's on your product. You know, that's really encouraging for brands, especially for brands who already had that as part of their ethos as a company, but also for brands who are trying to say, how do I engage with these younger generations and this younger buyer and consumer? You know, taking a look at sustainability and a critical lens in your materials and how you're showing up in your material space is a really good way to start.
Yeah. Well, and especially when we talk about items like socks, right? I can't tell you how many socks I own or how many socks I lose, and knowing now like where it's going and how it's not being recycled and what they're made of 90% of the time. It's refreshing to know that there are choices and like I said, people are voting with their dollar. The consumer is making an impact, and it's exciting. Very exciting. So with your goals, both individually and as a company, how does the industry align and how do we really support or get behind you guys and then, you know, in turn impact the development of the industry itself in the United States?
It's just a small question, Mandy. Just a little question there. You know, I think it's really interesting, right? The way we show up as a brand, Patagonia in the space, right? We just announced the Earth is our only shareholder. Our goal as a company for a couple of years now has been to save our home planet. But I think one of the things to remember is that that a, you know, I can't get through a call without her. It's every time. It was only a matter of time.
I love it.
Oh my goodness. You know, Earth our fundamental. Yeah, she's my extra coworker. I put up with a lot. You know, our fundamental values that, you know, we wrote about and Let My People Go Surfing still hold true for the brand. So, right, to cause no unnecessary harm in the industry where we can, to inspire change, to set ourselves up in our supply chain so that, you know, things that we're pushing our mills and manufacturers to do, then everybody who uses that mill and manufacturer has the benefit of using solution dyed yarns or, you know, have a collection opportunity for cut and sew waste and things like that. So I think one of the things that we try to keep in mind in a lot of the decisions that we're making is like, how is this not just a Patagonia problem or a Patagonia solution? Is, you know, is what we're doing going to help the industry overall? And so when we talk about how to support what we're doing and the work that we're doing here, you know, I think being critical, you know, as a brand around what your ethos is as a company. You know, I recently started kind of thinking through this idea of like purpose as a brand and as a company. And I think, you know, as you were saying, we're in this age where the younger consumer is asking us who we are as a brand, what is our purpose, why should they be putting their dollars here? I think, you know, brands coming in and aligning on what their purpose is and what they stand behind, you know, it doesn't have to be everything. You don't have to be Patagonia, but you can pick
sustainable farming. You can be the agriculture side, right? Each of the
pieces. Your piece.
Yes. And we need stand behind it. Yes.
And then I think, you know, as these brands, as these manufacturers, as these startups, if everyone can kind of drive towards what their purpose is and where they fit into that, you know, little puzzle of sustainability, I think we'll start to see the needle shift a little bit. We'll see more people, you know, buying with purpose, and we'll see more people manufacturing with purpose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, over time, the hope is that, you know, we see more people bringing these new opportunities to the table. And right, so when we think about the hemp industry overall too, right, like relatively speaking, in terms of volumes and numbers and units, like Patagonia is relatively small in the pool. You know, there are much bigger fish in the textile pond, so to speak. So if we see some of, you know, our larger counterparts coming in and saying, yeah, we think hemp is where we should also stand, or we're going to switch one line over to this, or we're going to switch one line into solution dyed fibers, or we're, you know, the more we see, you know, these well-loved brands kind of come in and make a stand in these places and say, yeah, you know, we're going to try it. Like, they don't have to move everything either. Like, just give it a try. And I think as more of them see success in making some of those decisions and kind of adhering to that purpose they've aligned for themselves, I mean, I think that's how we do it.
I totally agree. Well, and like we've said for a long time, right? Brands can reach the consumers that have that voting power or buying power. And so being able to educate. And it's been interesting since I've been in the industry, how much even in my short time, the pendulum has shifted to that consumer that's conscious of more than just what they're paying at the register. Know what it's made of, where it's going, what the ethics are behind the company. And yeah, it becomes more powerful. So can you, who else in the industry, right? On a personal level, maybe would you say is doing things right? Whether it's brands or, you know, people individually, do you have any shout outs you want to give?
Oh, shout outs. I mean, you know, I always freak
at this time. So anytime someone asks me, I'm like, ugh.
I know. I'm like, who do I, you know, look at in the industry? I mean, I think, you know, for me personally, like I follow like a lot of the brands that are looking at things like ocean plastics and who are looking at alternative things for like cleaning our water. So like, you know, Adidas, their shoe campaign using ocean plastic, like that was really cool. Like what a cool thing to do. You know, we're seeing programs like Recycled Down, you know, come out of our, you know, friends like the North Face and things like, you know, we're seeing some of these bigger brands really engage, you know, Allbirds is doing, you know, natural fiber welding with like alternative, you know, shoe opportunities. And I think, you know, there's a lot of brands that are starting to say, okay, like, here's what I do and how do I make that happen? So, you know, I love to see other brands that are, you know, engaging in hemp, like, you know, Toad & Co. and Pangaea and
I love it.
Prana, you know, our friends in hemp who are doing things. And in terms of, you know, things that I'm hoping to see in the market, right? Like we were just chatting before this call a little bit about hemp and wool blends. Like that's pretty exciting from, you know, a durability and a performance opportunity. Like that's very cool. You know, I'd love to see hemp show up in, you know, more blends that we haven't seen a ton of, but I'd also love to see, you know, lighter weight hemp show up in 100% hemp that, you know, feels comfortable, right? So, you know, what are those processing steps? What are the constructions? What is the engineering that needs to go into that to kind of bring us to hemp in these different ways?
I'll tell you, the material science side is what makes me the most excited. I keep trying to tell my kids, come on, go to school. I need some engineers and some scientists. Because it is, I think what we are going to start seeing developed now that we're getting, you know, processing that's coming online and some supply that's coming online is, you know, really honing in on those different products that we can scale then and come up with new materials. And it's exciting, very, very exciting, especially in the textile space, because it's a huge industry, huge impact also.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really exciting time to be a part of the industry and to kind of see this, you know, upsurge in people caring in this way and asking what comes next, right? Like I think there's also the larger conversation around like circularity is coming up quite a lot, and like I think from both a manufacturing and a consumer side, like that's a word that everyone is using, and I think understanding what happens for end of life is just, you know, equally as important when you're starting a product. So I'm encouraged by everything going on.
It's awesome. Awesome. Okay. So what can, I guess next, what do you guys see next? Do you have anything else before we sign off?
What do we see next? I mean, I think, you know, the brand overall, we're starting to step into this new space of what it means to have the earth as our only shareholder and what we're, you know, going to do with kind of the branches that will allow us to reach our goals, both, you know, environmentally, but also activism wise, and also, you know, politically, when we come into a space, like how do we overall make a change across the board? And so I think you'll be seeing a lot more of news about that when it comes to Patagonia in the future and kind of what that means for us as a brand. So
I do want to give a shout out to the video and what you guys have done in partnership with Rick Brown and his farm. And I see that there's capital being raised for him to complete his project or move forward with his project. So that's pretty exciting. So things like that, when you talk about the story and the message and the activism, you're doing it firsthand, walking the talk. And so it's pretty exciting. And it's pretty exciting that it's somebody close to our industry, in the industry, hands in the dirt, reaping some benefits from it. So thank you to your team and thanks for all of the work that's going out there, because it's being able to use influence and that consumer's vote and that consumer's dollar to make impact like this that, speaks a lot. So thank you.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
Okay, well, anybody else, if you guys have questions, whether you're listening now or later on, like I said, you can find our interviews on Google, Spotify, all different podcasts, social media channels, YouTube, LinkedIn, but go to the YouTube channel and subscribe. Click the little reminder button. It'll give you a notification when we have a new video that pops up. We've been doing two or three of them a week, sometimes four like this week, because we're lucky to have Allie join us. But if you do have any questions that come up, don't hesitate to reach out to me. You can find our contact info on globalhempassociation.org. You can donate to our trials. We did do fiber trials this year, which is pretty exciting, in 10 states with 10 different varieties. And we're able to really focus on fiber, in production of the fiber, obviously sowing densities. That was something I was going to ask you about, Allie, and before I sign off, are you familiar with like redding process that's been successful?
Yeah. So when it comes to fiber redding, we generally support field redding or stand redding, as they call it, just from like the natural enzymatic breakdown of the plant. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, historically, water redding has been used. But of course, when we talk about water usage, we're trying to not pollute the water and also use less when we can. So I have heard of some technologies where people are using steam explosion in like bioreactors to kind of expedite the enzymatic breakdown, but also kind of get more consistent fiber up front with the redding process. And so, you know, I equally think, you know, in terms of wet processing, innovations in that space are also really interesting when it comes to scalability and kind of uniformness of fiber.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I meant to ask you about that earlier because there's so much talk and so much variability just on region and state and if they get rain or humidity and, you know, what is that spec for good redded fiber compared to, and it's all over.
And it also just entirely depends on the decorticator you're working with, right? Because some people ask for green stock to go directly into their machine, which is cool to, you know, skip the enzymatic breakdown. You have less BOD issue. You have less runoff, you know, when it's laying in the field. Sure. But, you know, there's additional energy going into that process, you know, starting at a green stock. So just to even be able to compare across the board is also so difficult. And yeah, it's just something to really think about. Another step in the process.
Okay. Well, we'll leave everybody else hanging on that step, but I sure enjoyed your time. Thank you so much. Thank you for all that you're doing in the industry. Not just for the spinners and the processors and sustainability, but all the way down to the farmers, which is really why we're in this, is to support the farmers from the ground up. And so we're excited to have you guys doing what you're doing. Are you going to be traveling or at any events this year?
I am not sure yet. I'm working it out with my team, which talks and which what travel is available to us this year. But awesome. My hope is hopefully we'll see.
Okay. Well, if you are, I'd love to know. I'd love to connect with you sometime if we're out on the floor as well. Other than that, thank you very much, everybody. We do have another call tomorrow, 10 a.m. with Hemp Reno, which is a wool and hemp blend. They have beautiful sweaters. And so log in tomorrow, 10 a.m. same avenue, either LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. We stream live. Other than that, Allie, thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mandy.
Have a good day. Everyone. See you later. Bye-bye, everyone.